The world is a vampire.
No. Vampires? We're here to talk about wolves one more time for the Bitter End podcast. It's the Howling Wrap-Up.
Werewolves, herewolves. Damn it, because I am Todd Jordan and I am joined by my good buddy,
Mr. Tom Jenny.
And we have reached the bitter end. Season 3, damn it. This is a major life event for me. I can tell you, I finally, after being a big fan of the first Howling film for so many years, I finally watched 7 of the others that I didn't even know I wanted.
Are you glad?
Let me tell you that I am glad to be here now.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily glad every step of the way along the trip.
I feel ya.
This is a weird-ass franchise, man. Thank you for coming along with us for the voyage.
Yeah, if you've been watching the films, I hope that you have survived. If you haven't watched the films and you've just been listening to us like prattle on about some films you haven't seen, good for you.
You're the smart ones,
good for
probably.
Good for you.
Yeah, because it's not always been a treat, but it has been an experience.
I mean, it's been, since we started doing this podcast and setting ourselves up as franchise detectives and making it our quest, to, you know, we pick a franchise and we watch the whole thing from start to finish to see what it's made of. Is it good? Is it bad? It's probably a bit of both. Like, you know, like how does it work as a whole? This is definitely the roughest ride, I would say.
Like, really?
I think so, because I know even though like Friday the 13th was the longest one that we have
that
done.
That flew by.
Yeah, that flew by. And
for
then,
me, Highlander dragged more than this. Like, I feel like I've blinked my eyes and we're done with the Howling.
I know what you mean. Like, it feels like it's been quite quick getting from start to finish, but I feel like once you press play on that DVD, the time between pressing play and pressing stop is very long on some of those films. I feel like there have been more draggers in this franchise than in Friday the 13th or Highlander, because Highlander had some pretty dark times. But I think that there were, pound for pound, more kind of like well-rounded movies than in this. Some of these films have some really great like fun moments. Some of them were meant to be fun. Some of them weren't meant to be taken, I think, as we took them, but they were still quite enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like 2 and 3, oh my God, has a franchise come off the rails quite as severely as The Howling has? Like,
it started with such lofty ambitions, and I maintain, I mean, that original film, the Joe Dante film starring Dee Wallace, that film is great.
Yeah, definitely.
Unironically, no element of so bad it's good. It's so good it's good.
Yeah, it's
legit.
You
know what I mean?
It's a legit film.
If you've not seen the first Howling film, check that one out, because it's just a romp.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting in so many ways and feels so much more modern than any other film that comes after it in this franchise.
Like, even more than the last one we watched, made in like 2011.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But then you get 2 and 3, which is just, oh my God, like it's, other franchises take a little bit more time to get to that level of not knowing what the fuck they are doing, but it just, it's a completely different,
it's a catastrophe. It's a complete, in a way.
I mean, those films though are two of the films that like I enjoyed the most, like after the first film, like because I mean they were bad, but they were a lot of fun.
Oh, that Australia one, Howling Through the Marsupials.
In just how weird and like just how like the misguided elements of it are still really entertaining, whereas there's very misguided elements in other films that are just boring. And it's better to be dumb than to be boring, I feel.
Yeah, definitely.
But like, whoa, like it kind of goes to show that I guess whoever it was that was holding the purse strings on The Howling as a franchise, as an intellectual property, didn't really care.
Yeah.
That they were just kind of like, yeah, whatever. It's, I don't know, it was the 80s. It was horror. It's not, you know, we're not making Citizen Kane here. Just like, yeah, just bash it out. We'll make a bit of money. It doesn't have to be great. But like, was the original Howling, did it do... I mean, it must have done well enough to get a sequel, but obviously not... Did it not do well enough that people wanted to take it seriously?
I feel like, and I don't know the guy, so I certainly can't comment, I think that it's purely to do with Joe Dante, visionary director of the first Howling. I think he finished The Howling, wanted to do Gremlins. Wanted to do Gremlins instead. And I think that if he'd wanted to do The Howling 2, it would have been his to make, and it would have been fucking badass.
Mm.
Wanted to do Gremlins instead, totally respect that, moved on, and that became the film that he's much more known for now. I think the world would be a very, very different place if he'd have been like, man, I'm gonna stick out, I'm going to do Howling 2, and then I'll come to this Gremlins thing later.
Yeah, I mean, the cultural impact of Gremlins is far bigger than that of The Howling.
Of course, yeah, it's enormous.
But... And, like, I was reading that Christopher Lee, like, obviously was in Howling 2, and that when he was in Gremlins 2, he apologised to Joe Dante for having been in that film.
Big lad. Good for him.
Well, you know, you could see it in his eyes. Even when he was wearing the wraparound shades, you could see the death in his eyes being in that film.
Oh, Chris.
But let's break it down, like, how this franchise sits, how it sits as a whole. Because, like, the first two, like, the second one actually is a proper follow-on.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I would say that you could break down this franchise into different little pockets.
Okay, what are your pockets?
So you've got the first two films.
Pocket one.
Which is just, like, Howling Prime, I guess.
Howling Alpha.
Yeah, yeah, because you've got that. And then you've got Howling 3, which exists in its own other kind of like world, like that could be a follow-on to any of the other films because it takes place so far removed. It's in Australia and then it spans into the future.
It's so, I mean, bits, like, of it are in Washington, D.C.
Bits of it are in Washington, D.C., but it could easily, you could put it into the timeline with all the other films. And then we get to what I like to call the Clive Turner-verse, which is the Clive Turner Howling universe, which features the three films I think that he produced.
I don't fucking know, man.
He did what, four, five, and seven, I think.
He wasn't involved in six?
I don't think he was involved in six, but then he tied six in, like, because obviously he wasn't in that one, because he appeared in 4, 5, and 6 in acting roles.
Yeah.
And then he tied in Mary Lou in like the cameo that Mary Lou makes in 6 into 7. And he like tries to create this very ahead of its time interconnecting universe where every film is tied together pretty much because Clive Turner's in it.
That is a lofty ambition.
Like he is like the fucking Tony Stark of those films, you know? Like it's like when they're trying to set up like, you know, like the beginning of a cinematic universe, it's like everything is like Clive Turner. Imagine if Howling 7 hadn't been such a fucking dud. And then they start doing like vampire films and then like Clive Turner shows up at the end. Like, you know, like we could be having like the universal monsters cinematic universe that they're developing now.
Hey man,
in the 90s, but Clive Turner's in all of them.
The next Avengers movie might just be Age of Turner. Turner,
oh,
and
my
Hooch.
God, don't, oh my God,
is he involved in Turner and Hooch?
And then obviously like he was involved in making Lawnmower Man. Could we bring Lawnmower Man into that? Could we have like VR werewolves?
Oh
yeah. Right?
Oh, no, I need a moment, Tom. Yeah. I need a moment.
Oh, we've opened Pandora's box.
It's very strange.
But the Clive Turnerverse is... That's where you don't want to go, I think, in like, the Howling franchise.
Yeah.
Like, if you are interested in, like, checking out these films, the Clive Turnerverse is, like, the dark area of town where you don't go because you don't come out. I think the last one, that's fun. This is fun.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a fun, like, you know, like tween take on it. But those other ones are just draggers. They're cheap. They don't hold, like, they can't hold their own continuity together. You know, where like they were kind of like, oh, like in 7, where it's like Clive Turner's character was in 5, but he had a different name. I couldn't follow what was going on in that.
Tom, you can let it go, buddy.
I'm glad, because we're done.
We're done, baby.
I was going to say, like, other than the first one, would you revisit any of these?
Definitely, I will be revisiting the first one multiple times more. I love it so much. There's goodies, man. I'm probably not done with Your Sister as a Werewolf.
I could watch, like, 2 is maybe more watchable than 3, because 3 is really long. 3 is much longer than you feel it should be.
Yeah.
I would watch it if I was watching it with a load of other people who'd never seen it and I was really drunk.
Yeah, just to enjoy their responses.
Yeah,
to it.
Basically. I would basically sit next to the television. I wouldn't be watching the film. I would just be looking at them. Just like looking at their faces.
like an eager dog, yeah.
I mean, with that in mind.
Okay.
Do you want to, like, because obviously some people who listen to the podcast aren't going to watch all of these films.
Don't blame you.
And that's fine. But like me, and like there's a lot of duff. There's a lot of dead air, I feel, in this franchise. But there is some good stuff.
You, right?
Yeah.
You can pick one favorite moment from the whole franchise.
Oh, okay.
And then I will do the same. Whole franchise, one favorite moment. I'm going to call it the bitter end. Picked cherry. You can pick one cherry.
Oh,
what's the cherry, Tom?
Oh my God.
You can cherry pick it. So I can tell you what mine is going to be.
Okay.
My cherry that I'm going to pick is from The Howling 3, Marsupials. It is that giving birth scene, that really rank scene where the lead actress goes into the barn. And the weird little were-kangaroo baby crawls out of the pouch in her belly and, like, crawls up her, like, her whole chest and just, like, falls asleep in this... It's so gross. It's so gross. And for a film as cheap and weird as that, the effects in it have no right to be as good as they are.
Yeah.
And I think about it daily still.
So, because there's a few more bits that I would like to highlight, but going on with these, like, bits that, like, I come back to, it would be the big wolf in the end of 4.
Yes!
When the doctor rips his face open.
Oh, my God!
Because I would say that is the best werewolf. That is the most evil werewolf that has shown up in the franchise. The melting man in 4 is really cool. Like, that's awesome. Those two bits, basically, there's about like 5 minutes worth of footage in like...
Oh, it's strong.
In like a 90-minute film that are worth watching. But like the big wolf in 4 is definitely the best wolf. Neither of us have picked the first film. I think we've made it perfectly clear that you should watch the first film. If you don't watch any of these, watch the first film.
Yeah, definitely.
Like the first 20 minutes of the first film is great. Like, that's probably the best bit of every... Like, the opening of this whole franchise. Like, start to finish, 8 films, the opening 20 minutes is probably, like, the best bit.
Oh, God, you're right, aren't you?
It's all downhill.
Yeah. Oh, no.
How do you feel about this, like... how do you feel about, like, The Howling as, like, as a werewolf franchise compared to, like, how werewolves are treated in other films?
That's a really interesting question, Tom Denny, and I think that you're getting to be a really smart little interviewer there. So thanks for that. Thanks for having me on. I don't know, man. I'm conflicted. I feel like doing the whole franchise has changed my view of werewolves as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started... you know, doing the series, like, I was really into the way that The Howling did werewolves differently.
Yeah.
You know, they can turn at any moment. They're more like a kind of, I don't know. They're, like, hidden in the midst. You know, they're, it's like an enemy agent in your small community. Like, anyone could be the werewolf kind of thing. But they can turn on a dime. It's nothing to do with... Yeah. It's not a curse.
They're more like... a predator in the sense that they are waiting to pick you off rather than a beast that is acting on instinct and going to, like, tear you down because that's all they know. They are plotting. They are
every
thinking
other
ahead.
Big werewolf film I'd seen before The Howling was always focused on someone being like a little bit emo about it, of like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm a werewolf now.
Mm.
Like, what am I going to do? I don't want to be a werewolf. I'm a werewolf now. And the reason that The Howling made a big impact on me when I first saw it, when I was a lot younger, was just like, nah, mate, it's not. We're not even going to tell you really much about the werewolves at all. All of our main characters are just, they're prey, you know, prey to be picked off. And that was scary. But as it went on, that formula is quite limited. And although having the central character be this tortured, cursed werewolf is a bit done to death, that is still quite a rich scene.
It works.
Because you recently rewatched the Lon Chaney Jr. Wolfman, didn't you?
I did, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, I haven't seen it in like at least like 15 years or something like that, but it's a good film, and there's not a lot of like wolf action in it, but it's so much of it is about just like this man's just like mental collapse. Like, he really goes for it in like his performance, and like that thing of like losing his humanity and not knowing who he is. Like, that's rich stuff. I think that's the reason, like, it is a bit done to death, but the reason they keep going back to that rather than going with this, like what they're doing in The Howling, of like they're just the evil pack, and we're evil because we are, because we're animalistic. That's like, you do that in vampire films, kind of, you know, like a bit more like,
well,
I mean, you do get still some of that, that's that tortured soul in a vampire film, but that original Wolfman film, it does it so well, and you can see like there's other examples of it. The TV show Being Human, that like did wolves, like I really like that show, and that did wolves really well, and that did wolf transformations really well.
So there's like a very specific wolf transformation in that, in Being, I've not seen the show, but
okay. I mean, like, spoilers, I don't want to like give anything away to people that want to know, but like basically in that, in the first season, I think you can find like the clip on YouTube where there's like the vampire character, because the whole thing is about a vampire, a ghost, and a werewolf sharing a flat, and it's kind of like funny, but it's kind of dark, and it builds this like really cool big supernatural world that's just like happening just like down the road, you know. That when they're transforming into a wolf, it's like you die,
because isn't it that your heart has to shrink the size of a wolf's heart?
Yeah, because your body is anatomy just changes completely and has to turn into that of a wolf, and like it's all your organs are shutting down and your body's changing, your bones are cracking, and it really highlights how brutal the wolf transformation is. Like, you obviously see that in lots of other transformation scenes, like the first Howling or like An American Werewolf. Like, you know, that's pretty grueling. But yeah, like in this, it like really like, it verbalizes it, which is really cool. And like then there's a bit in like, spoilers, at the end of it, where like one of the guys who's like the main werewolf, he has to save like the woman he loves, that he forces a transformation outside of like the full, there's no full moon, so he forces a transformation and it kills him. Like, he's able to turn into a wolf, but because of the power of the moon, it's when the full moon is out that he is able to regenerate, like it doesn't kill him. So like he forces it and he's able to do it, but his body just shuts down because of like all the trauma of like basically turning into a whole other being.
That's super cool. Okay.
It's worth
ties together that kind of thing that's been a thread throughout this, of like werewolves being able to regenerate, basically being Wolverine from the X-Men, right?
Yeah.
And the way that the moon kind of plays in, I think, is kind of interesting, because The Howling obviously just went, nah, fuck it, fuck the moon.
Apart from a few films where it's like, yeah, moon, we'll have
yeah,
the moon,
whatever, fine.
That bugged me, but, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
I have a very clear memory of, I used to be like a really squeamish child. When I was a kid, like, everything that was even a tiny bit, even remotely scary, would like absolutely terrify me, and I would have to run from the room.
Yeah.
Which I think is why I kind of like really latched onto horror as I got a bit older, when I was like, no, I'm doing this.
I'm a big boy now.
Yeah, I think that's probably, you know, there's a lot more truth than that than I would want to admit. But I have a memory of watching, being quite young, and watching some live action kids show, but that was maybe for like slightly older kids than I was at the time, still a kids show. And it was, I wish I knew what it was called, but it was about like this kind of traveling circus, crazy family kind of thing, where they're all, you know, there's like the dad was a fire breather and the mum had a beard and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And they were, I think it was maybe an Australian show, possibly. We got a lot of those on British TV.
So you were doing like Round the Twist or something?
It was a bit like, it wasn't Round the Twist. This was a whole show. It was this. And one of the characters in it was a werewolf, and in the first episode there was a bit where they go shopping and they go to the supermarket, and there's a jar of instant coffee on the shelf, and on the jar of instant coffee there was a picture of like a tropical like Caribbean scene with like a big full moon on the coffee jar. And in this show the werewolf guy looks at this drawing of the full moon on a coffee jar and gets really upset, freaks out, turns into a wolf, and then like runs out of the shop. And I ran out of the room crying. It scared me so, so much. I have a very, very distinct memory of this. And I also at the time remember feeling like I was cheated, because even at that young age, I knew that a drawing of the full moon shouldn't work. I was like, no. If it had gone to a night scene, I would have been like, something's coming up. I'm going to just not watch this bit. It was the fact that it was the middle of the day, drawing of the full moon on a jar of coffee.
Yeah.
Nah, mate. That's just a circle, but right?
Yeah.
That's a circle. Does he wolf out every time he sees a circle?
I mean, it's funny you should say that, though, because I do feel that in that episode of Being Human, that he manages to force himself into being a werewolf by looking at a picture of a moon.
Really?
I don't know. I can't.
You
remember.
Can't do that.
I don't know. It's weird.
Like if the car is coming down the road and you only see one headlight.
Yeah, one of the bulbs.
That's the full moon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Anyway, that dredged up something deep from
yeah, really
one of my childhood scars. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah.
Love the howling though. Love that.
Oh, it's really good. It's really good.
So what about those low points? We've talked about our high points. Do you have like a real, something that really stung?
I mean, 7 is a given. That just whole thing was just, I mean, that was just kind of diabolical.
I don't even know that it really damaged the, it didn't do any damage to the franchise necessarily. It was a film that shouldn't have been.
What annoyed me was in 6 is
the freaks. The freaks!
Oh, no, not 6. 5.
Rebirth.
The one with the castle, the whodunit one.
Rebirth,
is that there is really no wolves in it. That they have a silhouette of a wolf costume, and then they reuse some footage, which I'm sure is taken from another film.
Yeah.
And then, like, the film finishes and you don't even see Mary Lou turn into a wolf. And, like, I enjoyed the film, but I do remember just being really annoyed when it ended because I felt shortchanged.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, it was one of the more entertaining and imaginative films in the franchise.
That one could have been real good.
But also just didn't have any fucking wolves in it, man.
Yeah, and on that note, I think lowest point for me would be in Your Sister is a Werewolf, the second film, the gorilla costumes. Because that film had wolves in it, but they weren't wolves, they were gorillas.
Yeah, it's funny, like, obviously, like, these films do live and die on how good the transformation is and how good the wolf is. And I think doing a werewolf is hard.
Well, it's expensive to film, so much more so than a vampire, where it's just a bit of white face paint, some teeth, you're done. Maybe some contact lenses if you've got a big budget.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, if you're going to do it, you can tease it the whole time, and then you got like, you can maybe afford to do one big one once, you know, which is why something like the last film we watched, like The Howling Reborn, is quite admirable that they had this idea at the end of like, no, we're going to have an army of werewolves taking over the world. Can't actually afford to show you that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, if there was a bit more money around for it, like, I feel like there's such a good big budget werewolf film out there, you know, on a global scale.
Yeah, I think the other thing is that also werewolves work better when they're done in practical effects. You know,
oh, like definitely.
I think the horror of it, if you want it to be horrific, if you want it to be like body horror, you need to do it with practical effects, with like the pulsating and the breaking of bones. Like,
yeah.
If you just want to do like an action-y kind of like underworld kind of film, CGI is fine. But if you want to do something like in these, like this more horror vibe, it needs to be practical because it's believably more physical. Like I rewatched some like horror, like some like werewolf transformation scenes. I'd say the one in Thriller, it's fucking good.
It is good, isn't it?
And also just like the final wolf. I love that look of the Michael Jackson wolf. Like it's a bit more cat-like, but it's good. Like that beginning, I could see a whole film of that, of Michael Jackson the werewolf. That would be a great film.
Yeah.
And also In the Company of Wolves.
Oh, the Neil Jordan film. I love that film.
Where like the guy rips his skin off of his face and like turn and like, oh my God, it is. If you haven't seen it, look up In the Company of Wolves, like transformation scene. It is brutal.
Yeah. It's a really, really cool like anthology film that's got a lot of roots in the writing of Angela Carter. It's basically picture like an allegorical werewolf film that's loosely based around like Little Red Riding Hood or something.
Yeah, it totally is, yeah.
It's super good.
Yeah, but that is like, ooh, that is brutal. But it's like, I saw like the transformation from the more recent Wolfman remake, which is cool, but there's a lot of CGI in it and I just didn't buy into it as much. I mean, the other thing that I don't buy into is that Benicio Del Toro is Anthony Hopkins' son.
What are you talking about? Spitting image, mate. Spit an image of him.
Some creative casting.
He's a chip off the old block.
I mean, I'm interested to see because they're doing a new Wolfman for the Universal Monster.
Is that, who's in that?
I don't know if it's been cast yet, but it's coming.
You know what else is coming?
Mm.
Reboot of American Werewolf in London, which I believe the screenplay is being written by Max Landis, son of John Landis.
It's bold. It's a bold thing to do. I got to say, I mean, I'm interested, but that is bold.
I mean, as long as the thing that would be really bold is if like John Landis issues a statement going like, I do not support this at all. Yeah. I have no son. As long as he's got his dad's blessing, I think it's going to be fine, don't you?
Yeah, it'd be cool. And we still haven't heard anything. Like 2015, they announced they were going to be rebooting The Howling. Since like May 2015, when they announced it, nothing has been heard. So we'll see. If they do another one, if they do any sequel, we will go and see it. But until then, I think the best thing we could do is probably pitch our own sequels to The Howling.
We're going to have to do that, man, because it's starting to get a bit late. It looks like night is falling, so we better not dwell too long on these.
Tis a full moon. Oh, it's fitting, isn't it?
It's quite romantic in a way, Tom.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Me and Todd are just here, sat around a microphone with one candle, just... just like Lady and the Tramp.
So, m'lady, do you want to do your sequel first, or shall I?
I'm happy to go.
Please do dive in. I would love to hear what tale you will spin for me on this moonlit eve.
Okay, well, sit back, make yourself comfy. I know you're a busy man. I hope you're going to like this pitch I've got for the one of the biggest horror franchises of all time, as it says on the back of the DVD.
Halloween?
Of Howling Set... Oh, no, sorry, it's a Howling film, sorry.
Oh.
let me give you the title. So, the title is The Howling, : Spring Break, Werewolves versus Chupacabras, : All Out War.
You had a quadruple :
Damn right. There should have been a hyphen in there as well between Spring Break and Werewolves versus Chupacabras. So.
Sold!
Okay. So we got these two mates, yeah. We got these two like young guys, Johnny and Donnie. They're going to an Ivy League school. I don't care which one, just one of the posh ones, you know. And they're going on spring break to Mexico. And like basically these guys, they've been friends since they were kids. They were always, you know, they've been looking out for each other. They were always like, they were going to go to this college. They were going to do everything together. Now, Johnny, he's from a more privileged background. Donnie's a bit poorer. He's had to get a scholarship. He's had to like scrimp and save. He's had to work his way to be at this Ivy League school. Now they're going down to Cancun on spring break. And you know who else is going?
Who's going?
Douchebag frat.
Douche frat. Oh, I hate those guys.
Alpha Kappa Beta douche. That's the frat that's gone down there. And they've been hassling our boy Donnie, but they kind of want Johnny to join the frat because he's from money. You know, and he's like, oh, your papa was an Alpha Kappa Beta douche. Bro, you should join us. Basically, they go down to Cancun. They're like, they're treating Donnie like shit. Johnny is like not sure what he wants to do because like joining the frat means he's gonna like have to leave his mate behind. At the same time, the douchebag frat are really being utter dicks to like the young Mexican kids who are working at the resort.
Of course they are. Dickheads.
Yeah. So this leads to basically the film is like The Howling meets like Revenge of the Nerds. So you get like Donnie and the Mexican kids who like work at like the the resort, like pranking douchebag house a number of times, and they're like, oh, Mexican. And then like there's a bit where like one of the Mexican guys gets got by a wolf. Suddenly shit gets a bit like, ooh, gets a bit tense. And then, like, the frat are, like, really pushing on Johnny to join. And Johnny's like, I'm going to join these guys. Donnie's like, no, I don't think you should do it. They're douchebags. I don't trust them. I don't think it's going to be safe. They have a big falling out. Turns out that douchebag frat are all fucking werewolves.
No way!
Yeah, man. And then like, Donnie is like, we got to get Johnny out of there. We can't let it happen. Turns out all the Mexican kids are like fucking were chupacabras.
Chupacabra, the goat sucker.
Yeah, like the Mexican goat killing like creature. Booyah! Yeah, and then they basically go and have all out war at like a foam party, all like soundtracked by like Skrillex.
Oh, mate, that actually sounds really good.
Yeah. And then, like, they kill off, like, the head douchebag bro werewolf. They save Johnny. Johnny and Donnie, like, they leave, the were chupacabras behind. So it's kind of like a bit of a riff on, like, the Australian, the Tasmanian wolf.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
like,
yes!
The were Tasmanian wolf in Howling 3. So we're, like, tying in with other, like, beast creature lore. And they go back to their Ivy League school. Like, everyone's a bit, like, weirded out about, like, all this like douchebag frat were like all basically torn apart by wild animals. And then maybe at the end we can just have like the dean is Harker.
Oh.
Something like that. We'll just throw a vampire in at the end as a little kind of like at the end the dean is a vampire. How about that? Can we have that?
So he was a vampire, yeah, then.
Yes, exactly. Setting up for like the next one.
Dude, I love it.
Howling, graduation, vampires versus werewolves, all out war.
And the sequel to that can be Howling Bandcamp.
Yes. So there you go. That's,
mate, 10 out of 10 would watch. Into that. Okay, well, mine is going to be a bit more of a downer by comparison.
Okay.
But mine normally are. Let me just grab my notes on the subject and I will hit you with my own Howling sequel. Okay, so I've come up with a sequel that can work now. It will come at the end of the sequence, mm-hmm. but it also will tie a loop with sort of refer back to stuff from many years ago. Mm. My idea, I must give a hat tip to my wife for this, who came up with the title for me. If I did not mention that, she would bring it up later for sure. The title of this is The Howling Nine. The Thing Too. It is both the ninth Howling film and the sequel to John Carpenter's The Thing at the same time.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it is set in the Antarctic after the events of the first thing. No, I'm not referring to the original black and white Thing from Another World. This is a specific sequel to John Carpenter's remake, mm-hmm. The Thing. There's another research station there. This time, not American or Norwegian, like in The Thing. No. This one is being run by Australians. Clive Turner's there. Yeah. He's trying to study whether or not Australians can survive a permanent winter. He's in his shorts. He's got his Barbie. He's got a surfboard. He's just looking out at the snow, trying to work out what he's going to do with himself. He's being studied. It's important research.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, a penguin turns up, just kind of waddles up. But it's a were-penguin! It's a penguin that at times turns into a bigger, scarier penguin.
Nice.
A kind of a penguin person. It's not a person that turns into a penguin.
It's just a penguin.
It's a penguin that turns into a penguin person.
Okay.
Right? This is crucial. It's got so when it turns into a penguin person, it grows big, scary back legs, like the wolves in the Howling One. Which sounds freaky to me.
Yeah.
And it's maybe got some teeth in its beak.
Nice, yeah.
No ears or anything. Still just tiny little flappy wings. But it'll fuck you up, son. So the were-penguin instantly kills Clive. And then it returns back to a normal penguin and disappears into the rest of the flock. But which penguin is it? How do we know? There is a thing among us. There is a were-penguin among the rest of the penguins. It's extra difficult to tell because all penguins look fucking identical. So at this point, Sandra Bullock turns up, just because I quite like Sandra Bullock.
Okay, fair enough.
Especially when she turns up in films. I think she's like extra good. She's cool. Gravity was great. She needs more films like this. And I feel like this one's going to be a big one. So she's a good choice. She turns up. There's definitely some stuff will happen in the middle. I'm not sure about that. But there's definitely a scene where she stumbles across a man having sex with a penguin. That man is Christopher Lee with his T-shirt tucked into his jeans, but he's got his fly undone so that he can still have sex, right?
Are we going to have to CGI Christopher Lee, obviously?
Yeah, don't worry about it. We can do it using offcuts. There's okay. probably like okay. deleted scenes for other films.
Deleted
that we can
scenes
make
of him fucking a penguin.
The penguin that he's having sex with then turns into a were-penguin, eats Christopher Lee, then Sandra Bullock shoots the were-penguin. Then Sandra Bullock goes into space. The end. Every franchise needs to have one film where they go into space.
I do not disagree with you.
This one is that at the end. Credits roll.
I like it. I like that we have both like gone with like, we're fucking sick of werewolves. Can we have some other kind of creature?
I think a were-penguin would actually be fucking terrifying.
It makes me think of like, you know, like there's like the Monty, there's like a Monty Python sketch with, I can't remember what it was. But basically it's got like some guy fighting a giant penguin with like electric tentacles.
That sounds awful.
I think it's because like they're trying to make like, something like, you know, Scott of the, oh no, so they're making Scott of the Antarctic as a film, but for some reason the contract he has to fight a lion and that doesn't really work within like Scott of the Antarctic because you wouldn't have a lion there. So like, what if you fight a giant penguin like with electric tentacles?
And I don't remember
like,
that bit.
Yeah. He's like, no, I need to fight a lion. So instead it's like Scott of the Sahara. He fights a lion. You wouldn't have a lion in the Sahara, but the penguin still turns up.
Sounds like a banger.
Yeah. Cool.
So we're kind of done. It's getting late. Like,
it's getting a bit late.
Sun is fully set. So we should probably do the reveal of what we're going to be covering for season 4.
Yeah, can't believe we're at season 4 already.
Guys, thank you so much for sticking with us through 3 seasons of this, you mentalists.
We love you.
We've thought long and hard about what we're going to cover for the next season.
Mm.
And we want to do something a little bit shorter.
Yeah, it's going to be a slightly shorter season. Just, you know, not everything has to be a big slog. It just has to be interesting. And then it means we get on to like, you know, then we can do other franchises. And, you know, like it takes up, surprisingly, watching like a film a week takes up longer than you think.
Yeah.
You
know? But I don't want you to think that like this is because we're winding down. We're absolutely not. It's more that we're kind of taking a breath. So yeah. That we can do a slightly longer franchise next time. So we're going to do season 4 is going to be a little shorter, and then season 5 will probably be a bit more epic. hopefully.
Yeah, yeah, quite possibly. Like, we're still working out season five. But four, we're having a slight shift in tone. So, like, we've done, like, you know, werewolves. We're going to go for a different genre. And for season four...
What's it going to be, Tom?
We're going to do...
What's it going to be?
It's a little film series called... Universal Soldier.
I've not seen Universal Soldier yet. I assume people fire a lot of machine guns
in
it.
You better fucking believe they fire guns. That's right. We're just going all out action with the next season. Now, I'm sure that some of you are like, Universal Soldier is not a franchise. That's one film. You are wrong.
Oh my God, you're dead wrong, guys.
You are dead fucking wrong.
How many films is it, Tom?
Six of them.
Six!
Now, why is Universal Soldier an interesting film to go and watch? I remember watching it when I was like 13. I remember being like a fun old romp. First film, directed by Roland Emmerich, Mr. Independence Day, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren.
Oh shit, son!
Yeah, it's going to be 90s as all get out. Then, we go into the next two films. We've got Universal Soldier, Brothers in Arms, Universal Soldier, Unfinished Business, direct to television movies.
Love it.
Yeah. One of them has got Burt Reynolds in. One of them has got Gary Busey in.
Oh,
does not
hitters.
Have Jean-Claude Van Damme or Dolph Lundgren in them at all.
Whoa.
Then we come back with Universal Soldier, The Return, going back to cinemas, bringing back Jean-Claude Van Damme. Then we go back to DVD with Universal Soldier Regeneration with JCVD and Dolph's back on board. Then we finish it off with another direct DVD one, Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning, which again has Dolph and Jean-Claude. Now, what is very interesting about this, apart from having two cinematic releases, two television releases, and two straight to DVD releases,
testify,
is that 50% of this franchise is considered to be non-canonical within its own franchise.
Non-canonical!
Brothers in Arms, Unfinished Business, and The Return are all considered to be, like, not canon within the Universal Soldier universe. This has to be the franchise with the highest number of non-canonical films in its like, within its canon.
So bizarre.
50% of it does not count.
Yeah, a 50% failure rate to like even have people acknowledge the film's existence.
Yes.
Is berserk.
Yeah.
Absolutely berserk. It's also interesting for me, partly because I've never even seen the original, so I'm going to be discovering every single one of these films anew.
Yeah.
But also when we first launched this podcast, we've mentioned it before, I'm a dyed in the black wool jumper horror guy, and Tom... not so much, didn't know that much about horror films, hadn't seen that many before. And like part of the opening conversations between me and Tom when we were working out this podcast is we were talking about Friday the 13th and things like that, and how cool it would be to like dive into the franchise together and get a non-horror fan's opinion on it. Now, the way that I feel about horror is the way that Tom has always presented himself to me about action movies.
I love an action movie. I love like a big, dumb, guns blazing... stupid fest of just like, you know, like the quips, I know it's not clever, it's not pretending to be clever, but I like it.
And I'm into that. I haven't seen that many of these.
Mm.
So all of a sudden, the tables are turned, man. I am in your house.
Right, exactly.
And I'm really, really excited to come into this with open arms and have you show me what it is about this genre that you like so much.
And the thing is, I've only seen this film once and I can't, you know, like that was like... over half of my lifetime ago that I watched this film once. I remember I liked it, but like, I'm so intrigued by like the peaks and troughs that this franchise has gone through, like, you know, like the canon of it. That's like, I just kind of want to go and revisit it and see what it's like. I remember I liked the first one. That's all we need.
That's all we need, brother. That's the rules right there.
Yeah.
So, we hope that that's cool. We hope you guys will join us for these six films. If you want to watch them, that's cool. Totally do that. If you want to not watch them and just listen to us chat about them, that's A-OK as well.
I think most of them are pretty easy to come by apart from the direct-to-TV ones. You can find them on DVD, but like, I think you may also just be able to find a stream of it somewhere, just like whatevs.
But crucially, we're watching them, so you don't have to. Mm-hmm. You can just come in and we will tell you everything.
I'm just
going to
tell
you,
I haven't even seen the films, but you do not need to watch Universal Soldier 2 and 3 start with Gary Busey and Burt Reynolds. I'm just saying.
That is such a heavy hitting combo of men.
The mania of Gary Busey. I'm so excited.
Hope you guys are excited as well.
Yeah.
So we are going to take a little break in between seasons. There might be the odd bonus episode in between. Who knows? Depends what happens. And if you keep an eye on the social media, we will let you know when we are coming back hard.
Mm-hmm.
So do follow us on Twitter at BitterEndPod or like us on Facebook at BitterEndPod. And we'll be sure to let you know when the new stuff is coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
How you doing there, Tommy?
I'm good. I'm feeling a bit hot under the collar, to be honest.
I can tell you got really excited talking about
that. I don't know if it's the excitement of Universal Soldier coming, but I'm just burning up. I just, do you think you could open the window just for me? Just
yeah.
Cause just like, I just...
Yeah, you're on by the window. I'll open it right now. Hang on a sec.
Oh, it's a bit, that's better. Oh, Christ. Oh, Christ.
It's the full moon.
Oh. Todd, I think you need to...
Tommy, you all right?
You need to get away. I think you need to get away.
Oh my God, guys, the full moon, the light of it.
I feel like my hair's getting longer.
He's transforming.
I'm just feeling a bit more Australian, mate. I just don't know. If I just, oh, dingo dongo, mate.
Oh,
I just,
no.
Oh, no whackers, mate. Oh, it's not fair, dinkum, I've got to tell you that. Oh, Australia.
He's transformed into Clive Turner.
It's right, mate. I'm aware, Clive.
I got the best diet, Leslie.
No, don't say that.
It's the vodka diet.
No, please stop talking.
Yeah, I drink vodka all the time.
Can you stop talking?
Oh, yeah. Lost 3 days already.
Just stop talking. Please stop talking. Clive, please stop talking.
Todd and Tom will return for The Bitter End Season 4, Universal Soldier.